documentary that he was producing about people with learning disabilities. It's another cause that he felt very strongly about. Again, nobody left behind. The kids who were pushed into the back of the classroom, he felt that wasn't right. He knew that if they had the right educational opportunity, they could blossom, and he wanted everybody in the country to think about that. And I'd also like the Democracy Now! Community not only to think about Jim, but also another documentary filmmaker, Saul Landau. He's a friend of ours, and we need to send him our best wishes. He's a really good guy.
That's right, and all the best to Saul, and you can go to our website, democracynow.org, to see our interviews with Saul Landau, who's battling cancer right now. Well, I want to thank you both for being with us and for all the work that you do, John Alpert and Matt O'Neill, who co-directed War Torn, 1816 to 2010, and Alive Day Memories, Home from Iraq. They were both produced by James Gandolfini. And that does it for our show. A very fond farewell to our video production fellow, Nemo Allen. We thank you, Nemo, for your persistence, for your dedication, and wish you the very best in your journey to Columbia and beyond. You'll always be with us. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Felsar and Mate, Nermin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Martina Starosta, Nima Allen, and special thanks to Nicole Salazar, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, our engineers, Becca Staley, our director, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grand, Jessica Lee, Christian Goff, Festa Godarza, and to our camera crew, John Randolph, Kieran Craig Meadows, Rakan Penny, Carlo De Jesus. I'm Amy Goodman, Juan Gonzalez. Our website is democracynow.org. Check it out.
This is WHFR, Dearborn. Now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is June 21st, 2013, and it's summer. Say yay to summer, Dennis.
Yay to summer, Dennis.
Okay, we can't hear you at all. So let's try that now.
It's sort of anticlimactic now, isn't it? No, I'm pretty excited about summer. And 1 month from today is my birthday.
Okay.
And I will be 30 years old.
That's a big deal. And we're very excited here at the station because we're going to be down at Concert of Colors broadcasting live for July 6th and July 7th.
2 weeks from now.
Yeah. And so hope we can see you down there. It's all free entertainment. We've got information about that. We'll be featuring on the air. There's actually several events that are actually coming up.
So many inside. Oh, events with our station?
Concert of Color events. There's actually three pre-Concert of Color weekend events that they're doing at different times. One next week. And a couple the day before the event on July 5th. And so a lot of great free entertainment of artists that we feature and that nobody else does pretty much in the Detroit area. And really, really a great lineup of talent and all free to see and to enjoy. But we're going to broadcast live over our station and over the internet from our website, WHFR.FM.
You know, and somebody asked me, they go, free entertainment and of the quality, and you and I think we can agree the quality is amazing, and it is called Concert of Colors, so it's music from all over the world. Mm-hmm. But somebody asked me, they said, oh, it's free. Will they get you with parking? Well, no. There's plenty of free parking around there. And they said, well, they get you with the food. Jay, I thought the food prices were reasonable as well.
Yeah, even in the even indoors at the Maxim Fisher Center, you usually have a local caterer.
Right.
Whether, I think 1 year it was Traffic Jam Snug that did the catering,
right.
and then there's other folks from that area, really quality stuff, and not big prices. It's about the same price from the quality caterer that was indoors as some of the food trucks outside. And there's going to be a stage outside if you love the warm weather. And, in fact, all the performances start about 2 or 3 in the afternoon and go to about 10 o'clock at night, so cooler part of the day. But if it's very hot, the Max M. Fisher Music Center, that's, of course, where the Detroit Symphony Orchestra performs in the large auditorium. That's a wonderful, cool, luxurious facility, so you could stay in there the whole time and just hear music either at the Diversity stage, where we're going to do the broadcasting from, or from the Symphony Orchestra stage. And there's exhibits inside, different nonprofit groups and service providers, like some medical facilities and so on. Anyway, all kinds of information and vendors inside, too, to wander around. And you can buy CDs from the artist and other things from Concert of Colors there, too. So it's going to be a great time for Will Be Had by All, of course. Here on the Journal, Local News and Alternative Views, we're going to start. We have a special guest scheduled for about half an hour from now, Jackie Lovejoy, the current and new president of the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce. And so we're going to be talking to her about what's happening over there, what new stuff is going on, and how she's adjusting to the responsibilities, where she just got officially into office on June 1st. So,
and they're not small responsibilities. She's got I saw her yesterday for the very first time. She was at a ribbon cutting.
Yeah, and there's a range of things. I'd like to go over that, too. A lot of listeners probably really, they've heard about the Chamber of Commerce. They know it relates to, like, local businesses. And they probably know that there's like kind of a tourist information center in their main office in West Dearborn. I think there's a sign on the grounds facing Michigan Avenue about that welcome center information. But
well, if they're not, there should be.
There will be, I'm sure, as soon as the new train station gets in. So we're going to talk about that for about 15, 20 minutes with her and just get the overview and welcome her to the area and also to the first trip to the WHFR Journal, too. There was two separate sessions. I get all chopped up
radio,
just
folks.
Thinking about it, folks, that Dearborn held last night, and that's not good.
I will tell you that we're going to get into these stories, but it's a good time to state that the opinions expressed on this show from Jay, myself, are not necessarily those of anyone here at the college or at the station itself. There, just buying you some time.
I was trying to threw the script at Dennis, but okay. Now, I wasn't at either one of these things, but I thought it was kind of unfortunate that they had two community meetings scheduled at the same time.
Both for very significant projects.
Yeah, but for separate reasons. One, the very, very big issue, which has kind of divided the city. In fact, the editorial in the Press and Guide this last Wednesday, 2 days ago, interestingly talked about that and said, look, there's a split, not just on the city council, but in the city. Politically, and that's not good for anybody if you can't work together. Right. Duh, that examples are Michigan legislature.
Oh, boy.
The other big one, the U.S. Congress. Anyway, so what they did was they had this meeting, this open to all meeting last night at City Hall, at City Council Chambers, and they basically did the overview, and that's on patch.com right now. If you go to dearborn.patch.com, you can see the story. It'll be, I'm sure, in the Press and Guide, either on their website before Sunday or certainly in the Sunday edition, and in both papers again next week, too. Let's cut to the quick here, because we've talked about the pro and con of moving and the Severstall $8.5 million and how that's going to be used, which is controversial. Ted Tefelsky, you know, the...
That's not his name. Not Ted.
Tom. I got to change it to Ted. I've said Ted so many times.
No, if he ever gets on the show, you can tell him.
Yeah. I keep thinking of the movie about the teddy bear. See, yeah. I don't know. Anyway, no, he's not like that Ted at all. It's a foul-mouthed children's toy. Anyway, not like that at all. Sorry, Tom. Okay. At the end, though, it says that six residents voiced their concerns. So it's pretty much all the stuff that you've heard before on this show about pro and con and so on. Well, but definitely Tefelsky, first name Tom, he has now stated quite clear that at this point he wants us to sell the ADP building back. He wants to stop the whole progress. I never actually saw that in print anywhere until this week.
Right. It's been insinuated. Often.
I've said it's possible to do that. I mean, we own the place, even though we haven't occupied it yet. We could put it back on the market.
And if we got such a good deal, then maybe we could make a little couple
bucks. We've kind of made promises to ArtSpace, and until they say no or pass a certain deadline, I think we're stuck with that, but maybe not. Maybe we can unoffer it to ArtSpace short term. I know that there's a big vote coming up by City Council about July 25th, somewhere in there, whether to dedicate money to the ArtSpace project, to the new City Hall or not. So a big, and of course, it's the same incumbents unless a lot of people don't show up, well, then they can't get it passed at all. But they've supported buying the place, so I think the incumbents will go ahead. So unfortunately, by the time the November election comes by, even if people that don't agree, like Tefelsky, with occupying the ADP building as the new city hall, they, you know, we'll be too far gone. We'll be too far into it, I think, at that point to back out. But I don't think we're quite too far right now. But these votes upcoming in July and August, I think that's going to tie us too tightly to the project. But what do I know? Anyway, they say six residents said there are concerns last night at the ArtSpace City Hall meeting at our current City Hall. Marion Wilkie, president of Eastbourne Neighborhood Association, was concerned that low-income housing, which it definitely will be for the artist and even others who qualify, could move in there. Even non-artists could live in the City Hall building.
Okay.
If they qualify. Okay.
Right.
And it's much reduced rent from other places in the city. As, of course, starving artists, they're not known as starving for nothing, right?
That's right.
It takes a while to get established, and you don't get that much money from your career when you're starting out anyway. And so that's why the rents will be lower. But Mayor O'Reilly countered that by saying he visited St. Paul, Minneapolis, and he talked to those mayors there where ArtSpace has things going, and they said the values of homes around the area increased tremendously. Direct quote from Mayor O'Reilly. Resident Kristen Taylor, who was our guest on the show running for city council this in November, or on the primary in August, asked O'Reilly if the city has plans to test for black mold in the ADP building prior to relocating its offices. He responded, quote, "That's just a myth. The building was used for 10 years very successfully. The building is perfectly occupiable. We went in and had a professional company do a complete analysis before we bought it." And he says there's never been black mold in that building. Well, I'm not sure how they know that. I asked Mayor O'Reilly that question on April 19th, and the professional company that did the complete analysis before City Council voted to buy it last September I've got the report. I mean, I've got their report. I've got the copy of it, the actual copy, and it specifically says they were told not to do any invasive investigation, and there were areas that it said they must not, they had no permission to look at. And of course, if you don't do an invasive, that is drilling, as I understand it from my engineering friends, architectural friends, if you don't drill into the walls and the ceiling, I mean, they did report there's roof leakage in many areas.
Watermarks.
There's watermarks, which means water damage on ceiling tiles and down walls. And because of that, that would seem indicated that you should check for black mold, mm-hmm. But they were specifically forbidden. And therefore, they did not do that. And in the report, it says, don't blame us for anything that weren't allowed to do.
It says that, really?
Well, so really close to that. They just said, this is the parameters of what we were told to do and not do. And they didn't say specifically black mold. Now, to Mayor O'Reilly's quote here, there's never been black mold in that building. None that's been reported or found.
Right.
Okay? And it is only 10 years old. I think one of the schools in Dearborn had a very bad smell that came from mold growing in the ceilings, but that may be different. To my knowledge, and probably to Mayor O'Reilly's too, there's been no bad smell.
Sure.
But then again, nobody is really in that building right now, so I don't know about that. Excuse me. I would have a company do the invasive report when I interviewed Mayor O'Reilly on April 19th. He seemed to say to me, and I haven't gone back and listened to that section recently, that they had their own people come in and check. When I said, look, this company was not allowed to check for it.
Sure.
He said, well, we had our own people check it out. So what is that? The Dearborn inspectors?
Wait,
Do they know, the housing department inspectors, do they know how to drill and assess for black mold? He did not say that. He said, we had our people check it out.
So he may have had a private company.
Well, no, because he said we had a professional company do a complete analysis before we bought it. Well, I'd like to know when and where that was, because it wasn't the report that was issued to City Council before City Council said we're going to buy it.
Right.
And I'm looking at the details here, and he's speaking in generalities, which are all probably true, but If I were the city council, until they had that actual invasive check for black mold, because there is so much water damage, I definitely wouldn't go ahead. How much more could that black mold study cost? Well, it's a lot of square footage. The 20,000 square feet, it's a big darn building.
Yeah, but as soon as you find an indication of any at all, that's the red flag. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
you know, and I don't care how good of a deal the city got, it's still a lot of money.
Well, but then if we do find it, we can't resell it very easily, because now it's somebody's going to have to pay to redo all whatever
and
the
that's
ceiling.
A lot of money to redo.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Won't be cheap. Add an extra million or two to the cost of the buying the building. Another resident, though, and we don't have all six reported here in the story, but another resident, Kristen Sickle, said she looked forward to it. It sounds great, and great opportunity from the city. And as you know, the basic positive summary is, it should cost less per year to operate that building than our current city hall. And it will, if ArtSpace moves in, they will take care of the renovation. That is the failing parking structure and other damage inside the building, which comes to about $17 million. Even Mayor O'Reilly said if we stay in City Hall, if we did stay, we'd have to put up $10 to $12 million just to make it habitable for ourselves.
But that was how this whole thing started. And then, of course, they brought in the fact that over at Tenneke, the schools might move in with them, which we now know is not going to happen.
If there was that sort of collaborative joining, it would look like an even better deal.
It looked like a great deal at the time.
I think the schools, with problems of their own, want to stay out of that, at least until they get past November elections and millages and so on.
I kept thinking, what if they sell the ADP building to ArtSpace now? But, whatever. There's still renovations at City Hall, so, and there's a reason why ArtSpace is keen on City Hall.
Well, I think because it has more of a beautiful exterior. I mean, architecture.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I mean,
interior.
Modern
as well.
Buildings are not thought to be very artistic. I mean, flat, low-level buildings. That's what they are. They're flat, low-level buildings.
Right.
Okay, they're serviceable. That is, they're usable.
Functional.
They're functional. Yeah, but certainly that is that City Hall is a example of architecture from 1920s, 1930s, and it's lovely if you like that sort of thing, and it would be a little bit more quote unquote artsy. And Downtown Dearborn Authority has approved of it in that area because they think it'll help business and more businesses to grow along Michigan Avenue there, Michigan Avenue and Schaefer. So, okay. There's one other item that we're going to talk about here right now. A judge has ruled that Dearborn can take the money from the Detroit Zoo and the DIA millage dollars that we have taken so far. It was voted on, and those of us in Dearborn that voted for it, we probably thought that this was like an extra millage. We didn't know it would cut into the millage collected for the West Dearborn Downtown Development Authority. Well, guess what? The judge said that Dearborn and eight other communities, this is on June 14th, including Wyandotte, Northville, and Plymouth Township, were within their rights to capture a portion of the millage to help with business growth in their areas. Well, however, Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly signed four bills on Tuesday preventing future money from being diverted. Now, of course, it's Kelly because at that point, Governor Snyder was in the Middle East, in Israel, trying to work up some business deals with them. Although he came back quickly this week to try to get Medicaid approved in Michigan to save the state money, to insure more people, to give us better health. And he was really mad yesterday. You probably saw that on the news, the Senate, the majority of the Senate being Republicans in the state of Michigan in Lansing, they said, nope, we're going to adjourn. Heck with you. We're not even going to vote on it. So he was extremely mad at them for doing that. And I say, if you're against something, just vote no. I mean, why delay it? Why delay it? That is just hurting everybody. And it'll cost Michigan $1 billion or more in penalties starting next year. This is the governor, folks, not Koronek. And by the way, opinions on the WHR Journal are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College. No, they're not. But we thank them for allowing us our editorial freedom here. I'm just expressing what Governor Snyder said. And as a businessman, he knows that the healthcare industry, the health insurance industry, in Michigan wants it this way. They're ready for it. You say, well, they're just grabbing those federal dollars. Yeah, but it's going to be good for the state. It won't cost us much initially. Yes, it will cost us a little more down the road, but Snyder said he'd take some of the extra money and put it in the budget to pay for these future costs for it. And it's just right in so many ways. And then the Senate Republicans in the majority in Lansing have gone on vacation, I guess, till, I don't know, August, September, without voting on that. So whether they'll come back and change their minds, I mean, sure, they're against it, but it is the law of the land right now, and it's just going to be terrible penalties and much increased costs for the state of Michigan next year. Do they really want that? And they say, well, I'll blame it on Obamacare. Yeah, well, they didn't have to. They, you know, it was all rewritten for to be a nice Michigan-controlled Medicare expansion. It was rewritten to tailor it to our state and with some of our concerns in there. And even the Republicans contributed to that. And now they're not voting on it. It did pass the House. I got the George Duranis, of course, whoop-de-doo email this week about the fact it was passed the House. They expect it to pass the Senate. Again, Snyder came all the way back from Israel early to argue for it in person. Didn't help. So we'll see where that's going to go. But those Detroit Zoo and DIA millage dollars, we won't be able to keep them in the future, again, because Governor Kelly, you know, acting Governor Brian Kelly, signed four bills on this last Tuesday preventing any future money specifically from being diverted away from the zoo and the DIA. And I don't know what that has to do with the downtown development authorities, but we'll find out. Okay? We're going to take a brief break right now for two comments about... from Jim Hightower, our friendly populist out of Austin, Texas, to comment on, really, they're both a little bit extended spins. He was asked to speak, as he often does as a pundit-type person, at a high school in Texas, and he had two different commentaries he recorded about the class of 2013. And we're going to hear those now and come back, and we'll introduce you to our guest, Jackie Lovejoy, of the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce.
Ironically, June is both the month of the summer solstice and of America's biggest blizzard. I don't mean a weather event blowing in from the Arctic, but a merciless storm of words blowing from the mouths of commencement speakers at high school and college graduations. This year, I was one of the blowhards, speechifying before some 260 graduates of my old high school in Denison, Texas. While it was an honor to be chosen as their ceremonial yakker, it was also truly humbling, since I was clearly the person that the diploma recipients and their 5,000 supporters in the audience were least interested in. Plus, commencement pontificators are expected to offer some sage advice to guide the grads, and I was all out of sage. So, I resorted to three admonitions I once learned from a West Texas cowboy. Never squat with your spurs on. Always drink upstream from the herd. And speak the truth, but ride a fast horse. Then I hit them with my main message. Now that you've had a dozen years in the classroom and earned this important credential, don't be an idiot. I used idiot in the same way that ancient Greeks originally meant it. Idiotes were not people with low-watt brains, but individuals who cared only about themselves, refusing to participate in public efforts to benefit the larger community, the common good. The Greeks, I told the students, considered such people selfish, contemptible, and stupid, and so should we. This is Jim Hightower saying, the encouraging news is that this crop of graduates from Denison High nodded in agreement. After all, they've seen that idiots are running things in Washington and on Wall Street, and this fresh and refreshing generation of youngsters seems to be hungry for less selfishness and more togetherness as our society's guiding ethic. So, commence, I said, and make it happen.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Harold's Hardware, located near my home in Austin, Texas, is the opposite of a big box chain store. It's an unchained, small-box store with a knowledgeable staff willing to help customers figure out how to do most any project. Harold's slogan is, "Together, we can do it yourself." I borrowed that rich concept for a commencement speech I recently laid on high school graduates in my hometown of Denison, Texas. Like most commencement droners, I urge the bright kids in funny square hats to do big things in life. But my message was that bigness cannot be measured in terms of personal wealth and self-aggrandizement, even though such narcissism is the ethic being preached and practiced by today's corporate and political elite. Rather, only by joining with others in democratic actions can any of us achieve something bigger than ourselves, something for the betterment of the whole community. As Bill Moyers noted in an earlier speech, civilization is not just what happens, it is what we make happen. The key word there is we, for no I is big enough to do the job. But together, as Harold's Hardware says, we can do it. The proof of this was sitting right in front of me at the graduation ceremonies. When I was in their place in 1961, every single person in my class and the audience was a white Anglo. Our schools and town were totally segregated. On this night, though, the ceremony was a glory of Anglo, African, Latino, Arab, Asian, and other ancestries. This is Jim Hightower saying, Denison became a better, more civilized place only because so many people, including some of the grayheads in this audience, had dared to stand together to make it happen. The class of 2013 applauded this ethic of social progress, and they gave me hope that we can pull our country together again. E pluribus unum.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
You're listening to the new WHFR Journal for Friday, June the 21st. Happy summer. And we're here in the studio live, Jay Koronick, Dennis Reimars, with the new president of the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to Jackie Lovejoy.
Thanks for having me. It's a delight to be here.
You've been on this campus before. In fact, just yesterday.
Just yesterday, as a matter of fact. Yes, I did.
Meeting our new president.
I did, Dr. Stan Jensen.
Uh-huh.
And you got a chance to eat here?
And we did. It was delicious. Yeah. I had a custom-made omelet in the salad bar, and I had a fantastic strawberry dessert that they lit on fire. It was great.
Did you bring any with you?
No, that was yesterday. That's long
You're like,
gone.
It's gone.
Strawberries flambé.
Yes.
That was the last of our international buffets. Sorry, folks, for the last 6 weeks. It's been going on every Thursday. Very popular. Our culinary arts program does that several times a year, even in the regular semesters, too. So watch for those in the future. But they're closed down to clean the kitchen, the grills, and restock for the fall semester, of course, which is coming up sooner than I want to believe. Well, I thought we'd start, Jackie. Certainly, welcome to Dearborn, and the Chamber of Commerce here is now, of course, Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, so it's the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce. The website still says dearbornchamber.org.
Well, that's one of the things we're going to be working on over
next
few weeks.
Going to change the name.
Well, it should be changed. All of our logos are changed.
Okay.
In print, in our directory. Mm-hmm. We seek to serve all of our members. We have a lot of people from Southern Wayne County who also belong to the chamber.
And how many members?
More than 600. We're in the mid-600s now.
Wow. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of different businesses. So you need a pretty big room to get together at the same time.
Well, so far, all 600 plus have not been in the same room with me. I've met many of our members, all of our board members. I couldn't ask for a warmer welcome. It's a great group of people.
Well, you always, the group in Dearborn has always had a number of activities and some like the food fest and the Taste of Dearborn, I'm thinking of, and that was just happened.
That was just on Wednesday, right. And that was a huge event. We had 870 tickets.
That's, of course, outreach. It's not just the members that participate, but it's the public, too, that are invited in to learn about these great restaurants that we have and to sample them, and that's always a lot of fun. There is the... I remember the morning breakfast.
The business builder breakfast, we do have those. I was at the one on May 20th with Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly, and the membership welcomed me. That was my first public appearance, and it was very exciting.
Yeah. Well, I just mentioned Lieutenant Governor Kelly, too, so he was a big shot while the governor was out of town anyway. Well, I'm just saying there's five areas. First of all, just to clarify for the people that really don't know that much, the Chamber of Commerce has all these businesses and business organizations, both profit and nonprofit, like the college, Henry Ford Community College is a member. And they're all working together in this group, which is not part of Dearborn City government. I think some people
Correct.
Still mistakenly think it's a branch set up. It's a service facility from the local city government, even though you want to help promote the city. And obviously you work together on several different aspects of promotion, but you're not part of the city. You don't take any city money.
We are a nonprofit as well.
Mm-hmm, right.
And we also have the Dearborn Area Chamber Foundation, too. So we're a nonprofit. We seek to serve the community and the business owners. We seek to educate and inform and be a great forum for everyone to come together. Mm-hmm. Not every event speaks to every person or every business owner, but we try to offer something for everyone.
And on the website, there's, I think, and you don't, I don't remember exactly what they are, but there's five areas that are within your mission. And we already talked about some of them specifically, like there's the tourism and the networking and for businesses. And some of the others?
Membership, community growth, the economy, seeking to retain businesses in the Dearborn and Dearborn Heights area. Those are all things that we focus on as a chamber. These are things that we mm-hmm. want to do. We want to bring people to the downtowns. We are one of the original cool cities. We have housing for everyone. We have safe and historic neighborhoods, more than 43 parks. Why not come downtown? I have to tell you, the Taste of Dearborn was my first official event, and it was just such a fun atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
870 attendees, and in 2007, we only had 152.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've grown a lot in the last few years.
Need a few more shuttle buses, I guess.
Well, there's food involved. I mean, I'm generally in.
Don't call me late for dinner.
Exactly.
Yeah, we were looking for our press passes for that, but
you should always call me for that if that goes missing.
Absolutely.
No, well, I weekly dine out at some of those restaurants, so I already knew them pretty well, and they are great. We have a lot of great restaurants in Dearborn, and people ought to explore all of those possibilities. One of the things I did see that stuck out as one of the little items under those five different areas on the website was the fact that you folks also sometimes get involved with political issues. You suggest laws or changes in laws?
No, we don't act in that fashion. We
you do, but
I'm 3 weeks on the job, so
okay.
I didn't know this was going to be meet the press, but to my knowledge, our public policy committee, we seek to educate and inform our membership of what's mm-hmm. going on. We largely sit on the 50-yard line. We don't lean either way politically.
Mm-hmm.
We want to give fair voice to everyone. Something we have coming up on July 30th is Meet the Candidates at the Joe Vaccari's new steakhouse, and it's actually on Diamos.
Yeah.
Sorry, Joe Vaccari.
That's all right.
But we have so many candidates coming out to meet the public in an informal setting before the primary on August 6th. So if you're in the area, do come out. We are taking donations. We are starting a Young Entrepreneurs Academy. We're the first chamber in Michigan.
What's the date on that again?
That's July 30th.
Okay.
At 5:30 at Joe Vaccari's Steakhouse.
Okay.
And then I believe the primary is August 6th.
Mm-hmm.
And that covers all the candidates from Dearborn and Dearborn Heights.
Wow, that's a lot of people. So is it just going to be a meet and greet sort of, or there's not going to be a debate or anything?
No, are so many candidates. It's going to be a meet and greet.
Hopefully they have name tags on them.
With any luck at all. I won't be so new at that point.
And well, I say that name tags thing because a lot of the candidates are not, they don't have name recognition throughout Dearborn. They have maybe known in their neighborhoods or which side of town they grew up or something, or in the business community, but they're not very well known. And I think any sort of extra meetings, gatherings, other than their own fundraising activities where people can meet them, hopefully a lot of them will be at Dearborn Homecoming right before the primary election. I hope they're not corralled into that little fenced area. Maybe you didn't see it last year, but there's for politicians and people that want to speak to the public, the city of Dearborn has set up a little cordoned off area.
Yeah, it's fenced
off Monroe Street, right before you cross the bridge to Ford Field. And last year, the police would not even let people put up a small tent or carry an umbrella to shade them from the sun. So I'm trying to think of all these council candidates, especially the ones that don't have name recognition. And they can't wander around handing out things or talking to people. So I hope they're going to have some sort of time that one of their big pavilions could be used for, like, the same purpose the chamber has set up on July 30th, so that you can comfortably, without the sun beating down on you, go around and shake hands and talk to people, give them each a table or something. And maybe that's different than some of the people that have religious or spiritual or ethnic issues to proclaim, but the all the people that are on the ballot, I think they need a nice way, a nice forum, many forums, in fact, to let people know who they are.
Well, ours is going to be a nice, you know, it's in an elegant setting.
Great.
We're going to have appetizers. It is open to the public, and it is no charge.
No charge. I was going to say, cost free. Free is a good price,
so
right, Dennis?
Always.
Go to the and if you look at our website address, it has changed. It's the DearbornAreaChamber.org. And if you go there, you can sign up for the event, just so we know how many people are coming.
Okay.
That's not a bad idea.
I went to that address. I went to Dearborn. You probably still links both ways.
Yes,
yeah,
it does.
Because for the people that still had bookmarked the other one. So, yeah, that's great. Well, I'm just saying that there are things that are interesting to the business community. I know that other chambers of commerce, like, and they're not related to you at all, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, that actually writes laws and sends them around to different state legislatures. And those are usually quite conservative, whether it's you consider that business happy laws or not. I was surprised to see that one little detail in there. But certainly, if you are a forum of 600 members of businesses in the area, and if they choose to have opinions to support something locally or statewide, I don't see a problem with that, and apparently it's in your charter. You can do that. Although, as a nonprofit, I bet you have to be careful about influencing public policy.
I don't. Yeah, as a nonprofit, I come from Davenport University, and I was there for 15 years. And as a nonprofit, you really don't take a stand politically one way or the other. You seek to educate and inform.
Yeah.
If my members seek to endorse one candidate versus another, that is their individual choice as a business owner, as a private citizen.
Well, it's great that you're going to have that get together on July 30th, and we'll keep talking about that here in the Journal. I know we're on your email list, so keep sending those to us, and we'll get the word out here. Your background, okay? You've been with Davenport College most significantly in recent years, but as you were telling me earlier, you have some other experiences that relate to being head of a Chamber of Commerce, too.
Yes. When I ran the Romeo and Oxford campuses, I was a 7-year board member for the Romeo Washington Chamber of Commerce. I was president-elect, and that was that's more of a board position as opposed to an executive director or a president, as we call it in Dearborn, position. And I did that for 7 years while I ran those campuses. I still go back occasionally and emcee their State of the Community luncheon sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's a great group of people. We had more than 400 members, and proper, that's about a 2-square-mile area for their downtown. Over 1 million visitors each year for the Peach Festival over Labor Day. More than 100,000 people attend their Labor Day parade. They have 4,000 adults that come back every year for their high school homecoming football game. So I'm used to that outreach, and you know, and it's another warm and welcoming community. My time when I was out there, I went to the Armada Fair. We had a Dodge'em car in the mud races. We did whatever we could at Davenport to get our name out there.
You said that obviously these things, that they gave you quite a bit of exposure to the community, but this has still been a whirlwind couple of weeks here.
Oh, it has been. This is day 15, the end of my third week. It's been very, very exciting.
So, what are some of the things? We knew you had lunch here yesterday with the president. What are some of? Oh, and we didn't meet, but I saw you yesterday as I was taping the ribbon cutting at a business in Dearborn Heights, and you were there. And
is it fair to say where I was? I was at the grand opening of McDonald's on Telegraph.
Right on Telegraph and Hass.
And it had been, yes, and it was newly renovated, yep. And it was a beautiful facility.
And just really nice people there. But everybody came out for that. I was really kind of surprised.
It was a hot, sunny day.
Representative Kavanaugh was there, all the dignitaries. But what were some of the other things that you've been involved with?
Well, and just in 3 weeks, our big ramp-up was for Taste of Dearborn. Yeah. We kind of get that ball rolling. We had 24 restaurants for a $20 ticket price. We had the shuttles running. To get all that going behind the scenes, and like, as I've said, we had 870 tickets sold, and we sold almost 100 the day of at the event.
Yeah.
It was exciting. It was a downtown festival. And really, my first week was kind of a blur, just getting to know everybody and shake
there
hands.
There are so many handshakes, I'm sure.
There are.
Plus the people that you work with. And I did get a chance to speak with some of the people yesterday, like Peggy Richard and a couple other people you work with. And they were like, they all commented very, very favorably on your energy level.
Oh,
and they're
thank
like,
goodness.
Oh, you're really fun to work with. So, and obviously, we know that the farmer's market's in really good hands, too. But have you had a chance to go? Are there on a Friday?
It's right outside my window. I have to walk through the farmer's market to get into the office.
Oh, darn, right?
I'm boosting it, Dearborn's economy. My husband keeps saying, slow down, slow down.
Well, it sounds like you have the energy to keep at it for a while more, at least, I hope.
With any luck.
Yeah, because we've already always had a very high level of activity from the chamber here, which is probably why Dearborn Heights wanted to get in on the action.
Well, we are happy to have them. We're coming up on our one-year anniversary, July 1st, of the two chambers merging, and it's been a very successful union.
Yes, yes. And, of course, membership continues to grow, and that's a good sign, too. And I wanted to ask about initiative. Do you take initiatives to, like, provide, education and or training for some of your members? I'm just thinking of the usual initiatives about, equal pay for equal work, like for women's employment. What about green issues? I mean, you obviously look for events that might be on the cutting edge of interest to your members.
Exactly. And education is one of our five initiatives, and we seek to educate our members. I am kind of walking into a well-oiled machine, and it is event season for us. Education-wise, I imagine that'll pick back up in the fall, just like back to school. And as of right now, we seek to really educate our members through the Business Builders Breakfasts. I know we're going to have a variety of speakers coming up in the fall that are going to be stimulating to business, stimulating to running your business. So watch out for those kinds of events coming up.
That was my last question. And you already mentioned the event among candidates for Dearborn Council, I assume, and mayor's race.
Dearborn and Dearborn Heights.
Dearborn Heights on July 30th at Andiamos, the steakhouse.
Joe Vaccaro's. Yeah. Thank you.
Anything else coming up in the short term, in the next month?
Yes. Oh.
I'm sure. I knew there would be. That's why.
The DMC is sponsoring our golf outing on July 19th over at Dearborn Hills. We'd love to have you come. 8 o'clock check-in, 8:30 omelet breakfast, 9:30 shotgun start.
Ooh.
Davenport University, we always have our alumni event over there. Hmm. And that is a fun – if you play golf, it's a fun course to play.
Which course?
Dearborn Hills off of Telegraph Michigan.
The Herndon course.
Oh, the Herndon course. Okay.
Herndon golf course.
Oh, very good.
No, it may not be the same one. I don't know. Dennis doesn't golf. So
I know it goes by Dearborn Hills.
Yes. Right. Well, it's they're a bunch of fine, obviously, the Dearborn Country Club here in Dearborn, too. So they've got a bunch to choose. But that's always fun for those golfers. A lot of business people like golf.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Is that because they do deals as they're putting
I don't know. Perhaps deals are done, but it's a good networking event. And if you enjoy golf, why not network while you're golfing?
Absolutely. Outdoors.
It's a bad golf pun, but I don't like to play golf because I get too teed off.
Oh.
No, you're right.
Because I'm so bad at it. Mad at myself.
I usually golf in the 70s, and if it gets much colder than that, I don't go out.
I thought you were going to say that's your score.
That's the joke.
Oh, boy.
We certainly look forward to all the activities that you're going to try to keep track of and add your zest and spirit to here at the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce. Of course, you have a lot of great staff that continue, Renee and Peggy and Mike, who we met.
Mike was our interim.
Right.
President, and he has been just such a great ambassador for me. Wendy Fichter came to us from the Dearborn Heights Chamber, and she is our small business development expert. And actually, there's a meeting going on at our office right now with some SBA, Small Business Association people.
Yeah.
I am really, really blessed. I wasn't looking for a job. I walked into a well-oiled machine. It really is my dream job.
And your main office is also the Dearborn Area Welcome Center, if you will, or Information Center for Tourists. There's a sign out front.
Exactly. There is a sign out front.
So who's ever in the office has to also find the brochures or whatever when somebody walks in.
We have a lot of brochures. Anything you're looking for, please feel free to stop in. We're in the lower level of the Bryant Library at the corner of Mason and Michigan. We're easy to find. It's just just a lovely group of people, so warm and welcoming.
And on the air publicly, Dennis told me today that you had your fax machine unplugged for the week after we broadcast live.
Did you know about this?
From there. And we do apologize. We were behind that desk, but we actually didn't use that connection, and I did plug back in the connection we did use. We had unplugged your credit card machine.
Just so we could do our live broadcast.
That might have been before my time, but forgive you.
I was back there. We were exploring that, Jack, to possibly use. And so on the air, Kornick is apologizing. Just like I said, I was wrong a couple weeks ago. These things don't happen often.
No, thank God for podcasts.
No one else would go behind that desk. Dennis knows how heavy that thing is. So we apologize if that upset the faxes. Although our fax machine here, it's 95% junk mail. So, but you do real business. And we're sorry about that. And it will never happen again because now I won't know where that other plug is.
And they probably won't let us back.
Well, I hope they do.
So I'll invite you back.
We had a lot of fun.
Don't worry.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And it's great meeting you. We'll see you at upcoming events of the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce. Keep WHFR informed, and we're going to go on to more news and information here. And just listen to the Bones theme one more time as we continue to dig deeply into Dearborn issues and events.
Ironically, June is both the month of the summer solstice and of America's biggest blizzard. I don't mean a weather event blowing in from the Arctic, but a merciless storm of words blowing from the mouths of commencement speakers at high school and college graduations. This year, I was one of the blowhards, speechifying before some 260 graduates of my old high school in Denison, Texas. While it was an honor to be chosen as their ceremonial yakker, it was also truly humbling, since I was clearly the person that the diploma recipients and their 5,000 supporters in the audience were least interested in. Plus, commencement pontificators are expected to offer some sage advice to guide the grads, and I was all out of sage. So, I resorted to three admonitions I once learned from a West Texas cowboy. Never squat with your spurs on. Always drink upstream from the herd. And speak the truth, but ride a fast horse. Then I hit them with my main message. Now that you've had a dozen years in the classroom and earned this important credential, don't be an idiot. I used idiot in the same way that ancient Greeks originally meant it. Idiotes were not people with low-watt brains, but individuals who cared only about themselves, refusing to participate in public efforts to benefit the larger community, the common good. The Greeks, I told the students, considered such people selfish, contemptible, and stupid, and so should we. This is Jim Hightower saying, the encouraging news is that this crop of graduates from Denison High nodded in agreement. After all, they've seen that idiots are running things in Washington and on Wall Street, and this fresh and refreshing generation of youngsters seems to be hungry for less selfishness and more togetherness as our society's guiding ethic. So, commence, I said, and make it happen.
I know you heard that before, but I had to be kind to our guest, Jackie Lovejoy, the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce, and say a few pleasant words about how grateful we were that she was able to come by today and how we're looking forward to working with her. So if you didn't hear it all the first time, well, there it was. And you don't want to be an idiot in the old-time meaning of the term, do you? I bet you get to brush up on your ancient Greek in order to look that one up. But that's Jim Hightower for you. Well, what else is happening? This is the new WHFR Journal, WHFR.fm, the station making waves, doing things a little differently here with our alternative variety music format and our couple of hours of talk shows every week that give you a different spin on things, like Democracy Now! That you'll hear for the hour preceding the Journal, but only on Friday, even though it is a 5-day-a-week show. We just carry it on Friday. And They don't subtitled it the War and Peace Report for nothing. International news and perspectives that you don't hear on the other commercial media. And yet I think done very, very responsibly. In terms of that, I wanted to draw your attention in the newspaper to we've got a couple stories to finish up the hour with today. 2 o'clock, remember, Highway 61 with Joanne Kay. The editorial, well, two editorials, actually, in last Sunday's Press and Guide, to stay with the topic about newspaper. There's a great long editorial called The End of Traditional Journalism on page 6A in the Dearborn Press and Guide. And Craig, you know, has been with newspapers in the area for years, and he actually knows about this. And he does talk about, for example, Benjamin Franklin, he quotes at the beginning. You remember Ben Franklin, okay, the person who gave us
I personally
all kinds of
remember
things.
Remember him, you might. Okay. Sorry.
Well, Ben Franklin's almanac and his humble statements about what he believed in as true, like his moral beliefs. And, of course, he's one of the great forefathers of our country, signer of the Declaration of Independence. And written extensively about the way one should live their life. And he says, the press from her fecundous womb, can we say that on radio?
I think so. You already
fecundous,
did.
Yeah. Brought forth the arts of Greece and Rome. Her offspring, skilled in logic, war, truth's banner waved in open air. So that no matter what the conflicts that are going on, it is the press, capital P, the newspapers, the journalists, that actually can make us rise above our problems, to enhance our art and our culture, but also to maybe dispel some of the more brutal and violent aspects. The trouble was, as he says here, there was a time long, long ago when newsrooms were filled with reporters working their phones, working their contacts, working their beats. At the old Mellis newspapers in Lincoln Park, another life ago, he says about himself, I was one of six community reporters, each of us assigned to one of the six cities and school districts we covered. I worked the phones, my contacts and my beat, Taylor. But that was then. With the advent of the internet and explosion of social media and digital connections to the world, news reporting has become fragmented, compartmentalized, less analytical. It also has too often become less comprehensive and less relevant, therefore. Today, people get their information from Facebook, specialty websites tuned to their particular interests, the comedy channel, and instant text and tweets from friends, relatives, and social sites with whom they identify. So, the newsroom at these papers has shrunk. The Herald, the News Herald, Press, and Guide of today bears little resemblance to the one I worked in more than 20 years ago. Today's business model just doesn't support the kind of staff we used to have. Heck, they don't even have an editor at the Dearborn Press and Guide. I think they have one staff reporter. I think the others are all part-time. They don't have a photographer anymore. Let Millard Berry go. And so it's almost impossible to do the kind of objective reporting, this is my statement here, that was possible when Craig Ferrand was part of it. He says, now, however, the paper is strung out, reporters grabbing what they can and then posting it, videotaping it, texting it, tweeting it, updating it daily even hourly, and then writing it for print. Too often missing is the sense of history and context that provides a deeper meaning, a deeper understanding of what's happening and why. It's not the news reporter's fault. Newsrooms across the country have been decimated, in the true definition of the word, and those who are left paddle faster than ever upstream to pick up the slack. It's heroic work, thankless work, and necessary to our society's very survival. In fact, I should say, because I know this is true with Morris Goodman and his editorial opinions, Morris doesn't get paid a penny.
No.
So Craig Ferrand is probably not getting paid a penny either, even for stating this obvious criticism of what's happening in news today. So the bottom line is, as a news consumer, he's not just complaining, he says, as a news consumer, where do you start? Which brings me back to compartmentalization. To defend themselves from infobombing, people restrict their viewing, listening, and posting to only those sites and outlets that share their beliefs and or interests. It's not that people, for the most part, want to limit their diet of news. They simply have no choice. It's self-defense. So what he's recommending is, don't. Okay? Read widely. I'm summing up here because this article does go on, but I highly recommend it. Last Sunday, June 16th, Greg Foran's opinion about the end of traditional journalism and how to survive it. Read books, newspapers, magazines, even those you may not agree with.
That's how you learn.
Yeah, and try to figure out the differences. Compare the facts. There's not just one set of facts, okay? If you hear something on Fox News and you don't also listen to the same story in MSNBC, for example, you'd be shocked to see the differences and the support they have for those different facts. And they're all based on facts, sort of, but it all depends how you interpret them. So it's tough for me. I subscribe to liberal journals, conservative journals. I go to those websites. And for the sake of this show, and for your sake, gentle listener, I probably put in about 10, 15 hours a week, a couple hours a day, to try to get the story straight and the facts straight. Even then, I'm not sure. And I try to tell you that. And if you really hear something on this show that you agree with, you better check it out several thousand ways yourself before you act on it. But don't get frustrated that, I'm just going to give up. You know, don't give up. Please, our whole future as a society depends on not giving up in this struggle. The other editorial, quickly to bring your attention to, is from Wednesday, and this is the longest editorial, and I don't know who wrote it because they don't have an editor at the DPG. So is it the owner of the paper? I don't know who wrote it. It's not titled, but it is the newspaper's editorial, and it says its title is "Sides Need to Come Together." And they're talking about the issue of moving City Hall and selling the old one to ArtSpace. They do a great summary. It's the longest editorial I've ever seen in the Dearborn Press and Guide. The longest editorial ever. So whoever this unknown editor is that doesn't get credit for being the editor,
right?
Maybe the regional manager or somebody. They did a very comprehensive review of the issues about the new City Hall, the old City Hall, and they say we've got to, you know, work on this together collectively. Don't polarize over this. They have some very good recommendations, so I highly recommend. This is from Dearborn Press and Guide, 6/19/13. Sometimes I've noticed their editorials are not on their website, pressandguide.com, which is terrible. It's horrendous. Mm-hmm. That all these editorials, Morris, Craig, their own newspaper editorial, they should be there. I trust this one is there. Would they be afraid of their own editorials? Even Patch.com, they're filling up with these blogs of local people.
Right.
And my problem is, I don't know who most of these people are.
So there's a question of credibility.
Yeah, I don't know what their background, their experience is, what their knowledge is, how many books they've read. Just because you got a blog and you write stuff doesn't mean you know stuff enough to mean that your issues should be taken on face value. And, of course, almost nothing should be taken on face value, as far as that goes. Look and read. Subscribe to one, if not both, of the papers in Dearborn. That's the only way you'll get a good head start. Listening to this show, as you must be doing, or you wouldn't hear my voice right now, is a great start. Tell your friends and neighbors about it, too. Remember, they can always listen on the podcast. WHFR.FM is our website. Click on Talk Shows, click on WHFR Journal, and then choose the date you want. So there you go, and let it stimulate you and or cause you to read and study more. I wanted to end with, we've got about 4 or 5 minutes to go, two issues. First of all, the one-act play festival is coming up this weekend. Actually started last night here on campus at the Adroy Auditorium at Henry Ford Community College and the Fine Arts Center, and it continues this weekend. And next weekend. And Dennis, you had the honor to interview Jerry Jablinski, theater director and actually one of the playwrights for the festival this time around, too, yesterday. Tell us about that.
Well, I interviewed him yesterday, and when I went back to get the interview today, it we have actually the way they set this up, and sometimes they'll break it up by genre, so you'll have comedies one weekend and dramas the next. This is an interesting situation. There's four short shows that will, like you said, started yesterday, and they'll go through Sunday. The show times for everybody, the night shows on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights are at 8 p.m., and the Sunday is a 2 p.m. matinee. The $7 ticket price is for all, and that is seating right on the stage, very intimate setting. But the four shows that are showing right now, these are all student-directed. The first show is Saturday Night by Julius J. Epstein, and that's directed by student Sonia Gales. The second show is Courage, Mr. Green by James P. Ferguson, and it's directed by student London Johnson. The third show is I Bring You Flowers, written by William Lang and directed by Natalie Paris. And Conflict is the fourth show by Wade Bradford, and that's directed by student Jamie Pappas. And then the following weekend, the way it was explained to me by the technical director and professor of the theater, this actual class, the one-act play festival class, Jerry Jablinski, said that he had four other people lined up, or he'd actually offered the director's position to them, and for various reasons they couldn't. So he had this whole weekend, and he had been working on a one-act play himself, and that particular play is called The New Freedom, a new play about recovery written and directed by Jerry Jablinski, and that will follow the same schedule next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evening, and then a Sunday at 2 p.m.
And those performances are at 8 p.m. on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and 2 p.m. only on Sunday,
mm-hmm.
and that's this weekend and next. And the cost is very reasonable. Is it $7?
$7
per person.
At the Adrey Auditorium, which is right on campus, on the western part of campus in the back.
Mm-hmm. And so you might want to come both weekends, folks. There's just a little blurb about it in the Times Herald and the Press Guide. But Times Herald has a long review from Sue Suchita. I guess she saw some early press previews, and very, very nice. It's like a whole half page describing it. And you know things about one-act plays. First of all, go see a play. Morris Goodman wrote about Players Guild presentation a couple weeks ago, and it's so special. If you haven't gone to a live theatrical play, drama, comedy, musical, whatever, it's an experience that is different from all the others. It is a separate medium of communication, a separate area of art and culture. And we have very high quality work, not only here at the college, but in the local community too. So we highly recommend you get to a play instead of Hollywood movies. You know, they're mostly, do you really want to see World War Z and zombie attack?
Well, no. Not when you ask that way. Anyway, this is a great story.
I can cut off his microphone if he would have agreed. Agreed.
Angie Lai is a former student at HFCC in the theater department, and she went on to Eastern Michigan University to get her bachelor's and her master's degree. Mm-hmm. And she is now back at the college helping out. And she's like the scenic designer for the entire festival, which is, as you probably know, Jay, quite an undertaking to help with everybody's sets.
And one of her brothers is?
One of her brothers is actually here in the music
Daniel?
Department. Yeah. Well, no, he's actually the editor for Local Patch.
Patch.com.
And her other brother works here in the
Anthony. Music department.
Is it the whole entire, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Instruments.
Yeah.
And he's,
well, he's been the, yeah, the music production synthesizer classes.
I've seen him out at the farmer's market as well.
Oh, he's a great performer, too.
Yeah.
He's got his own band and,
sure.
and fantastically talented. So we hope you can get to the Henry Ford Community College One-Act Play Festival, different this weekend than next weekend. So maybe you want to come here twice, even. So it's at 8 o'clock, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and on Sundays it's at 2 o'clock. Obviously, Thursday already happened last night, but tonight at 8, tomorrow at 8, and Sunday at 2 for the four one-act plays and the one-act play, no intermission. Why is it a one-act play? There's no intermission, folks, until it's done. That's going to be next weekend, written by Jerry Jablinski, one of the preeminent, brilliant people teaching here. Many brilliant people, artistic people teaching here at Henry Ford Community College, but in terms of theater and performance, Jerry Jablinski is just one of the best I've ever met and known, and I think I've known about 30 years now, so I guess...
You can speak from experience,
yeah,
sure.
I've had some experience on his previous productions, so I'll try to get over here. Now, we only have another minute or so before Joanne gets in, and she is picking the latest and best of blues. I know our podcast might just have cut off, but I wanted to mention that we will cover in the future about the continuing budget cuts here at Henry Ford Community College. It was reported in the Dearborn Press and Guide last Wednesday, and we did hear about it here on campus, is that it looks like we might need a millage renewal and or maybe a slight millage increase. For 10 years, you know, folks, our money comes from property values in Dearborn, and